Welcome to Talking Sense, Living with Sensory Changes and Dementia, an audiobook from Hammond Care, written by Agnes Houston with Julie Christie. I'm Lee Hatcher. Our book is in six chapters on vision, hearing, touch, position, sense and balance, taste and smell, and finally, where do we go from here? So, why this book? One of our authors, Agnes Houston, was diagnosed with younger onset dementia of the Alzheimer's type in 2006. After that, her care was in the hands of the Old Age Psychiatry Service. It consisted of a dementia early onset nurse to monitor her medication and her cognitive function. It was a negative experience for Agnes. All it seemed to be about was what she'd lost. No one paid any attention to her sensory challenges. There was no rehabilitation program and no counselling. She felt as if her care had been taken out of her hands. Agnes consulted her optician, who knew little about dementia. Her GP team also didn't know much about the sensory changes associated with dementia. Her psychiatrist did make time to talk and listen to her experiences, but again, there was little practical help. Something was missing. It was as if she'd been given a diagnosis, she'd been assessed cognitively, her medication monitored, and then left to her own devices. So, Agnes chose to go on a quest for knowledge, to truly understand what was happening to her. Surely, she thought, I'm not the only one having these sensory changes. She asked other people living with dementia about their experiences. As a result, in 2015, she produced the booklet Dementia and Sensory Challenges, which was funded by the Life Changes Trust in Scotland. Then, in 2016, she obtained a prestigious Churchill Fellowship to travel to other countries and learn more. Her findings confirmed the need for a handbook, Talking Sense, and now this audiobook. We hope it'll be a starting place for others to discover information on sensory challenges. Among other things, it's a guide on who to go to for help, where support organisations can be located, and how to access services and support. It's Agnes's hope that with this knowledge, people can avoid the distress and sense of being alone that she experienced. Agnes is grateful to Professor Mary Marshall for her work refining the materials that she's gathered over this time and assisting in developing this book and audiobook. It's also for health professionals. She wants to introduce them to this subject area so they can work together to help people with dementia as they experience sensory changes. Her hope is that sensory issues will be part of the curriculum of all relevant professionals, such as GPs, nurses, allied health professionals, and those studying health and social sciences. Also, that care homes and home care partners will recognise when people with dementia need support related to sensory issues. It's Agnes's passion to see this knowledge shared among health professionals so they recognise the interdisciplinary learning in this field. This could include conferences and events. They can provide the tools to be knowledgeable about the senses and dementia and not look at each in isolation. She wants people with dementia and their care partners to have the right support at the right time. This has been a 12-year fact-finding journey for Agnes, and she's keen to share the evidence she's gathered over that time. Most importantly, she's a voice to promote the knowledge and lived experiences of people with dementia and their care partners around the world. A word on the shape of the book. In each chapter, we briefly describe the senses, the impact of ageing, and the impact of dementia. Then we address the sensory problems that can occur. We cover the implications of environmental design and interior finishes, with some tips on self-management for the person with dementia and advice for families and care partners. Throughout the book, we include the experiences of people living with dementia. We'd love your feedback. This is the first edition of this book and audiobook, and we welcome stories and suggestions for the second edition. You can do this by going online and visiting dementiacentre.com or emailing publishing@hammond.com.au. Before we move on to the chapters on senses, we're providing an overview of dementia and its impact. Sensory changes are not mentioned specifically in this brief section, as they are the main focus of the rest of the book. So, what is dementia? Dementia describes a range of progressive disorders that affect the brain. It's experienced by people of all ages, although it's more common in older age, where it may be accompanied by age-related issues. The brain is the control centre for everything we do, with messages travelling to and from the body. As a result, if the brain is affected by dementia, our daily lives will also be affected. Research has taught us that different human activities and functions are controlled or influenced by different parts of the brain. For example, the frontal lobe is involved with planning and behaviour. The temporal lobe relates to memory. The limbic system in the brain interacts with sleep and hunger. Each type of dementia impacts the brain differently, which means the experience of dementia is highly individual, but with some similar aspects. Alzheimer's disease is most common and is usually characterized by a gradual but persistent decline in cognitive functioning. Vascular dementia is next most common and usually involves a stepped cognitive decline due to a series of vascular events that affect blood circulation in the brain. Lewy body disease is another type of dementia caused by the death of nerve cells in the brain. Symptoms can be characterized by fluctuations in a person's mental state, including periods of extreme confusion and hallucinations. Falls may also be common. Other forms of dementia include frontotemporal dementia, formerly known as Pick's disease, Huntington's disease, alcohol-related brain damage, HIV and AIDS-related dementia, and many other diseases that cause symptoms of dementia. While the experience of dementia is different for each person, and the different types also vary in impact, dementia is almost always a progressive condition, with increased symptoms over time. So what about the human impact of dementia? While these more clinical descriptions of dementia help us understand what it is, what it does, and how it can vary, it's most important to remember the very human side to living with dementia and the effect it can have on our lives. Memory impairment occurs frequently with dementia and can impact many aspects of life, from remembering a name, knowing where you are, or what season of life you're in. People with dementia will often lose their short-term memory more quickly, and so are more likely to rely on their long-term memory. This could mean, for example, that a bereaved person with dementia may believe that his or her spouse or partner is still alive or has only just died, or they might mistake a child for their spouse, or believe that they are living 30 or 40 years in the past. Depending on the stage of dementia, memory changes might also mean the person with dementia doesn't recognise family or friends and might not identify familiar places or usual routes. The person may forget that he or she needs to wear glasses and may not remember what they've done today. People living with dementia can find it hard to plan, organise, and solve problems. Challenges may occur in getting organised to prepare a meal, make a cup of tea, get ready for the day, or go out for an appointment. Simple problems may become overwhelming, such as getting the TV remote to work, hanging the washing on the line, or working out what train or bus to catch to arrive somewhere on time. The dozens of little neural connections that otherwise allow these activities to occur are interrupted because dementia has damaged the brain and impaired memory. While we know that every person with dementia is different, it's common for more complex activities, such as family finances, to become difficult in the earlier stages of dementia, while more basic activities, such as bathing and dressing, are challenging in the moderate and later stages of dementia. So in summary, dementia is a term describing a range of progressive conditions that affect the brain. Dementia is more commonly a condition of older age, but younger people do also live with dementia. Memory problems, sensory changes, difficulties with problem solving, and challenges with planning are some of the common impacts of dementia. Well, that's the end of our introduction. Coming up next, vision and the difficulties a person with dementia may have, how sight works, the impact of ageing, the impact of dementia, and how best to manage these difficulties. I look forward to you joining us in Chapter 1. Welcome to Chapter 1, in which we talk about vision, how sight works, and the impact on sight of both ageing and dementia, and how we can best manage these challenges. A person with dementia may have vision difficulties because of changes to their sight resulting from ageing or another health condition. Having dementia may add to the challenge of living with these sight changes. Or the person's eyes may be healthy, but their brain has trouble interpreting what is seen due to the impact of dementia. Let's learn more about vision, dementia, and sensory changes. So how does our sight work? Our eyes provide us with vision, the ability to receive and process visual detail, as well as enabling several photo or light response functions that are independent of vision. We can think of our eyes as capturing images and pictures of the world around us, and then sending these to the brain. Your brain then processes and interprets what your eyes are seeing. The process of seeing involves many different stages, but in order to work out what the image means, sometimes our brain uses shortcuts. This means that some of our vision processing by the brain can be based on expectations of what will be seen, as well as information from our other senses. Thoughts and memories also come into play. For example, have I seen this image before? As we bring all this together, we then come to recognize the image and its meaning. When this process goes wrong, such as when the brain is damaged by dementia, we can experience what experts call visuoperception difficulties, which occur when there's a hindered ability to make sense of information taken in through the eyes. One of the causes of sight impairment is aging. Age-related changes to the eye include seeing things less sharply, for example, needing more light and good contrast, colour being less vivid, needing more time to adapt to changing light levels, like going from outside to indoors, the visual field getting smaller and the loss of peripheral vision, problems with depth perception, shadowing from small shapes floating in the visual field, floaters, sensitivity to glare. There's also an increasing chance of having eye conditions such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, and cataracts.
I'm watching my daughter as she sits and reads me a letter, but it is as if there is a dark shadow right where her stomach should be. The middle section of my sight is filled with a black blur. It makes it so difficult to concentrate on what she's saying.
Conditions like this one of macular degeneration can be managed by a medical specialist. Comparatively, in middle age, many people experience presbyopia, which is an age-related decrease in the ability to see objects that are near. This can be remedied with glasses. People who have younger onset dementia will also go through these changes as they age, but the brain's ability to cope with these impairments can be affected. Having dementia can make living with sight impairments much more difficult, as well as causing other sight difficulties. The Royal National Institute of Blind People in the UK has a leaflet called Dementia and Sight Loss, which makes the useful point that sight loss is typically underdiagnosed in people with dementia because one condition can mask or be mistaken for another. The leaflet describes the problems that can arise, which include becoming withdrawn or uncommunicative, being clumsy or falling more, having visual hallucinations, holding things up close, feeling confused and disorientated, being startled by noises or people approaching. It's crucial that people with dementia actively seek advice on how to improve vision. Regular eye checks and the right spectacles may make all the difference. Some people with dementia experience a narrowing visual field, making it harder to see objects at the edge of your eye. This is called your peripheral vision. For this reason, it helps to approach someone with dementia from the front, in full view, and ensure you leave time for the person to process the fact that you are there, as the image goes from eye to brain and back. Vision problems in dementia are sometimes referred to as brain blindness. This is where, despite an ophthalmologist or hospital eye specialist advising that there are no sight problems, the person still cannot see properly. In this case, the issue is not with vision, but with the person's perception of what they are seeing. This means that the brain's ability to process or find the right match for the picture is impaired, or sometimes it just takes longer to find the right match.
Agnes, the author of Talking Sense, finds going into lifts almost impossible, especially if they have a large mirror inside. What she sees is a big hole instead of the floor. The mirror just adds to her confusion and distress. In Agnes's own words, "I can't trust my eyes, which can also be dangerous. You see, they put black mats at the bottom of lifts, so it looks like there's no bottom to it. It's a leap of faith to actually step onto it."
So, as you've heard, people with dementia can have visual difficulties caused by the brain, but still have healthy eyes. It's easy to understand how this may lead the person with dementia to speak or act in a way that doesn't make sense to others. Here are some words that professionals use in relation to dementia and vision challenges. Misperception. The person sees something and the brain tries to make sense of it, but may not perceive what is actually there. For example, a black mat on the floor, which the brain sees as a black hole, or blue flooring in the bathroom, which the brain sees as water. Then there's the word misidentification. Damage to different parts of the brain can lead to problems identifying specific objects and people. This can mean mistaking an object for something else and finding it alarming, such as thinking a coat stand in your hall is a person and being concerned that there's a stranger in your home. Misperception and misidentification are different from hallucinations, which occur when someone sees, hears, smells, tastes, or feels things that don't exist outside of their mind. Posterior cortical atrophy, PCA, also known as Benson syndrome, is a rare form of Alzheimer's disease. This condition causes shrinkage or atrophy of the posterior cerebral cortex in the brain, resulting in the progressive disruption of a person's complex visual processing. People with PCA generally experience the following: difficulty recognizing familiar objects and faces, increased sensitivity to bright lights or shiny surfaces, double vision, and difficulty seeing in fading or low light conditions, difficulty judging distance, speed, or perspective. This can cause problems with stairs, the speed of traffic, reaching out for things, or putting things down on surfaces, and confusion where stationary objects may appear to move. Then there's vision and vascular dementia. A stroke or vascular accident can cause someone to have problems with vision. The most severe form of this is hemianopia, where the peripheral visual field is reduced by half and on a particular side.
I look out across the lake to the pavilion over there. In front of it stands a tree with leaves that reach up into the sky, but I can only see half of any of it. The right-hand side of my vision is completely black.
For someone with dementia, this could be quite frightening, especially if they are unaware of the changes to their vision. It's helpful for care partners to approach from or stand on the side of the person's good vision. There can be visual hallucinations in dementia. They can be as simple as seeing flashing lights, or as complex as experiencing animals or people in bizarre situations. Some hallucinations don't make the person feel anxious or threatened, whereas other hallucinations can be frightening, and the person may react accordingly. Some people with dementia have reported that they have vivid dreams, and when they wake up, the dreams remain a reality. Charles Bonnet syndrome is a type of visual disturbance where people with partial or severe blindness experience visual hallucinations. Such hallucinations are only caused by sight loss. You don't need to have dementia to experience these. They are caused by a lack of visual information to the brain, and as a result, the brain then fills in the gaps with its own images. This usually improves over time. So how should we respond? If the person with dementia is experiencing hallucinations, carer support, both at the time and when visiting the GP, is important. Some helpful ways to respond to hallucinations include remaining calm, using language that is reassuring in a familiar setting, such as sharing a cuppa. You could say something like, "Although I cannot see what you see, would you mind describing what you see?" Changing location can sometimes make the hallucinations disappear. Listening carefully to what you hear and recording this on paper. Checking with the pharmacy in case the hallucinations are a side effect of medication. Always consult the person's GP. When visiting your doctor to discuss hallucinations, the following advice can help make it a successful visit. It's adapted from an Alzheimer's Society fact sheet. Dementia Australia also provides a range of useful fact sheets. If you're visiting a GP about someone's hallucinations, then consider providing notes about what the person saw or sensed, what time of day it occurred, and whether it was after an event such as a nap, a meal, or exercise, where it happened and how long it lasted, how the person responded, for example, were they distressed, what words did they use to describe the experience, medication the person is taking and the dosage, including over-the-counter supplements, the person's medical history, including any previous sight or sensory conditions, the person's use of alcohol or other recreational drugs. Anesthesia needs to be given with great care, as people with dementia can have reactions resulting in hallucinations. An example of this is Edward McLaughlin, who was administered an anaesthetic, commonly recommended for people living with dementia, and he experienced hallucinations. He painted one to capture the image, which he called the Dortmund dog. You can see it in his art collection. Anesthetic use generally, where a person has dementia, can be a problem. The effects of the drugs can last several weeks, and during that time, the person may experience increased confusion, an increase in sensory impairments, slower information processing, and sleep disturbances. Then there's the eye and circadian rhythms. The eye has a second function, which is to receive light, to operate our body clock. In our eyes, we also have non-visual detectors called ganglion cells, which send signals to the part of the brain concerned with circadian rhythms or the body clock. When you have dementia, you may find your body clock is not working so well, and you're awake during the night and sleeping during the day. It's important to get enough daylight or really bright light for the body clock to work. You may need to organise your day to make sure this happens. A helpful book is Enlighten, Lighting for Older People and People with Dementia by David McNair, Richard Pollock and Colin Cunningham, which explains this fully, as well as giving a lot of information about how to ensure places receive enough light for the ageing eye and for people with dementia. Age-related sight problems may require many design changes, including doubling the usual levels of light. Where possible, maximise the use of natural light because it's usually much brighter. Ensuring good contrast. If something doesn't contrast sufficiently, then it's invisible. This can have severe consequences, such as a person missing the seat of a chair or the toilet seat when sitting down. Don't rely on colour for orientation. If an older person's ability to see colour is impaired, and their memory is too, it's not reasonable to expect them to be able to find their way using colour cues. If colour is to be used in any meaningful way, it needs to be vivid.
I tell you, public toilets are tough. I can never find the actual toilet. It doesn't help that the walls, floor and toilet are often all white. I try and avoid them as much as possible. Well, at least at home, the toilet seat itself is black.
Good contrast, like that of the toilet seat against the rest of the toilet or bathroom, can help the ageing eye find the toilet. Additionally, if the impairment is related to perceptual problems caused by dementia, then there are some adaptations to the environment which may be helpful. Ensure the floor is the same tone throughout. We'll have an explanation later of light reflectance value in the appendix, contrast in tone. Avoid speckled or sparkly flooring, as this may be seen as litter or dirt, or as if it's moving. Avoid elaborate patterns on the floor, which may also be seen to be moving. Avoid swirls, vertical strips, and complicated patterns in fabrics, which may be misinterpreted. So what's the best approach to the self-management of vision impairment? The first step for most people with vision impairment is to visit a high street or local optician, optometrist or GP. The GP will then arrange for more specialist eye assessments by an ophthalmologist or neuro-ophthalmologist. Neuro-ophthalmology is a specialist branch of medicine concerned with visual and eye movement problems related to the nervous system. Neuro-ophthalmology teams assess, diagnose, and manage disorders of the eye. After an assessment by an ophthalmologist in the UK, you can also be placed on the Vision Impairment Register by contacting your local council. There are two registers, one for those who are sight impaired and another for severely sight impaired. Depending on the register you're on, you could be eligible for a range of concessions, and you can also have an assessment of your needs undertaken by the local health and social care team. You can also request a low vision assessment to access aids to make the most of your remaining vision. This service varies according to your geographic location. For example, it can be provided by hospitals, local authorities, or charities. In the UK, the Royal National Institute of the Blind, RNIB, employs sight loss advisors who can help you to find the right person to talk to in your area. If you're a veteran of Her Majesty's Armed Forces and you have a vision impairment at any time in your life, you can contact Scottish War Blinded and ask to be assessed to receive added assistance and rehabilitation to maintain your skills. This organisation provides outreach services and support, including grants for equipment, funded respite care, home modifications, sports, recreation and fitness facilities. Royal Blind, a Scottish charity, provides specialist residential facilities for older people with a visual impairment in Scotland. Some similar services are provided by organisations such as Blind Veterans UK, Blinded Veterans Association US, and Blind Military Veterans Australia. You can discuss these services with your GP, who can then make inquiries or referrals on your behalf. In Australia, people who are assessed as blind or vision impaired may be eligible for a range of benefits issued by Centrelink, as well as a number of state-based supports, such as the Vision Impairment Travel Pass for legally blind residents in Victoria, New South Wales, or Queensland, allowing them to access free public transport travel. Organisations such as the Royal Blind Society, Blind Citizens Australia, and Vision Australia also provide registers to sign up to in order to access various resources and support. The National Disability Insurance Scheme provides funding to eligible individuals to connect with their community, gain employment, and live ordinary lives. This may include accessing assistive technology, occupational therapy, or support around the home. You can discuss these services with your GP, who can then make inquiries or referrals on your behalf.
Here are some really helpful tips if you or your carer are concerned about your vision. First, reach out to an expert. Book an appointment with an optometrist for an eye checkup. If you're concerned about symptoms of dementia, set up some practical processes around the home to help, and it might pay to have a conversation with the optometrist about dementia and discuss any personal needs, so it can be a positive process all round. Here's another really practical tip we could probably all do with. Check regularly that your glasses are clean and that the correct glasses are being used for reading or distance. Also, label each glasses case for easy identification. If you need help, we'd suggest a step-by-step approach. First, see the optometrist. It'll help to bring your glasses and a list of medications. They'll conduct tests to optimise your vision. If symptoms persist, they'll send a letter to your GP and you might be referred to another specialist for more in-depth tests. If that's necessary, you'll be consulted and asked for your formal permission for other specialists to care for you. And after that, you'll get a diagnosis.
Well, that's it for vision. Coming up next in Chapter 2 of Talking Sense, we move to hearing. Again, how does ageing and dementia impact on that critical sense? The auditory hallucinations that some people may experience, and, as always, practical tips on how to best manage these often tricky dynamics. Welcome to Chapter 2 of Talking Sense, Living with Sensory Changes and Dementia, in which we talk about hearing, how it's impacted by both ageing and dementia, and some really practical tips for life at home, including good home design. Both hearing impairments and dementia increase in prevalence as people age, meaning the person with dementia may have the challenge of age-related hearing loss as well as auditory issues associated with dementia. Our ears have two jobs. The first is hearing, and the second is maintaining balance. Hearing occurs after sound vibrations cross the eardrums to the inner ear. The outer ear is the part we can see. It acts like a funnel, trapping sound and directing it to our eardrum. The middle ear passes these vibrations on through tiny bones, and the vibrations reach the inner ear. Here, they are changed into nerve signals and then carried to the brain by the auditory nerve. We can listen to specific sounds by choosing to focus on these, even while there are other sounds around us. Balance, or equilibrium, is controlled in the inner ear, where fluid and small hairs stimulate the auditory nerve. This helps the brain maintain balance, and we'll talk about this aspect more fully in Chapter 4, Position Sense and Balance. As we age, the structures inside the ear start to change and ear function declines. The ability to hear sound decreases, with hearing impairment among older adults common, and the rate of impairment increasing with age. If our ears don't capture all of the sound around us, we then don't have all the information we need to interpret it accurately. Hearing impairment can alter a person's ability to understand speech, while a progressive loss of hearing, defined as presbycusis, especially for higher-pitched sounds, can also occur. Hearing aids can help, as can clearing the ear of a build-up of wax, a not uncommon cause of temporary hearing impairment. But don't put anything in your ear. Another impact of ageing is that some people may also start to have problems maintaining balance. So, what's the impact of dementia on hearing? If you already have hearing impairment and develop dementia, you could face a complex crossover of symptoms. As you seek to develop strategies or ways of coping, a peer support group can help. It's good to talk to others experiencing similar challenges and to be aware of the risk of social isolation. For example, when you go into social occasions, let people know the best way to support you. It's important, where possible, that having dementia does not lead to stopping the use of hearing aids or being assessed for hearing impairment and being prescribed hearing aids. Some common impacts of dementia that are reported include heightened sensitivity to sound and being unable to filter out background noise, such as the TV being on while trying to have a conversation.
Give in to fresh.
Indoor, outdoor heater.
Thank you for joining us.
Now, let's look at how dementia interacts with some specific conditions. First, hyperacusis and tinnitus. Hyperacusis is a debilitating hearing disorder, which causes increased sensitivity to certain sounds. It may include an inability to tolerate some everyday sounds, which become an unpleasant experience. Living with this condition is not easy, and is particularly difficult if it's combined with dementia. An impaired ability to filter out unwanted sound may develop, and can make life very challenging in situations where there's a lot of sound, such as a cafe.
Kathy, a person living with dementia, was with a friend in a coffee shop. She could feel herself getting more and more furious. She didn't know it at the time, but it was the noise. It made her want to scream.
Tinnitus is the term for the sensation of hearing a sound in the absence of any external sound. A person with dementia may find this particularly distressing and confusing. The British Tinnitus Association has good advice on its website for both hyperacusis and tinnitus. Free phone apps, which are available for download, provide a decibel meter for measuring sound levels. This is useful for informing you if noise levels around you are above the recommended safe level. To prevent the pain and distress caused by noise, you can buy earplugs from local pharmacies or get noise-cancelling headphones. You can listen to your own music using headphones or earphones. Be bold. Request loud music to be turned down in restaurants. Or ask for a quiet area. Explain why. Pointing out that it may be harming the staff too is often effective. Some supermarkets now have quiet times for shopping. You can ask your local supermarket if it has a special time like this. If they don't, you can ask them to consider it. Or you can shop somewhere else that does offer this service. If you think that you have hearing or balance problems, go to your GP. You can ask to be sent for a hearing test if the symptoms continue. Ask to be referred to an audiologist or the hospital audiology clinic. If you have sensitivity to loud noises, ask for the Uncomfortable Loudness Level, ULL, test. This is not done as a standard test. You must request this. Once you have a diagnosis, you can then take steps to manage the condition. As mentioned, any problems with hearing are more difficult if you have dementia, and you may find yourself quickly becoming overwhelmed or angry. That's why being aware of these sensory changes and talking to others may help. Some people with dementia can also experience auditory hallucinations where they hear things that are not there. This can sometimes be comforting or even enjoyable for the person. The following examples from the Alzheimer's Society's Talking Point Forum are used with permission.
My grandmother has dementia, and we've noticed a few times that she has mentioned she can hear music and then shares the song lyric. She is not really a musical person and has never been known to have a little sing-along. The kinds of songs she claims to hear are not ones that may have just been on a TV advert or on the radio, so it doesn't seem plausible that she has heard these songs in the background.
Auditory hallucinations can, unfortunately, also cause anxiety or upset to the person.
My partner would often complain of hearing music at night after we had retired to bed. He couldn't settle as he had to keep checking that the TV and radio were switched off. It made him unsettled and we often wouldn't get any sleep, even when I explained that there wasn't any music on in the house.
Auditory hallucinations can also have care partners scratching their heads as to where the person with dementia is hearing what they report.
The result of a common auditory hallucination with my wife was her reporting that the weather forecaster had just said that it was going to rain, snow, freeze, hurricane, brilliant sunshine. No idea why she fixated on weather forecasts. As it did not worry her, I just let it go. She didn't remember any threat of impending disaster.
All of this has design implications. Ensuring that rooms are quiet is the most helpful design modification that you can make for someone with a hearing impairment. Reverberation is a frequent problem, but less of a problem in smaller rooms. Noise needs to be absorbed by soft surfaces, such as carpets, curtains, fabric on furniture, or even acoustic panels. These can be on the walls or ceiling and are now available with pictures on them, so they look like art. Noise is more distressing if the source is not clear, such as background noise, or if it's beyond your control. If possible, bedrooms and living rooms should not be adjacent to busy roads or railway lines, and it can be helpful to consider double glazing. Multiple sources of noise, such as the washing machine, vacuum cleaner, radio, TV, and loud conversations,
I finished. That's that one of Grandma.
All at the same time, will be very distressing to someone with a hearing impairment, and worse still, for someone with dementia as well. The book Music Remembers Me, Connection and Wellbeing in Dementia, has some very helpful general sections on noise, sound levels, daily activities, and living with dementia.
Mrs. Johnson was a long-standing member of her church and always enjoyed meeting old friends after the service over a cup of coffee in the church hall. This was especially important when she developed dementia, which affected her confidence in other social situations. However, she became increasingly agitated because it was a big, noisy room with no sound-absorbing materials. Lots of people talking, the clatter of cups and cutlery, chairs scraping on the floor, all overwhelmed her. Here are some more tips if you or your carer are concerned about ear health. First, be aware of this important issue. Have it on your radar. Never put anything into your ear to clean it. It's a good idea to see an audiologist once a year. If you use hearing aids, check the batteries and clean the tubing. If you can't do it, arrange for someone who can to help. If you have problems with hyperacusis or tinnitus, ask your audiologist if they have a rehabilitation course available.
Well, that's the end of our chapter on hearing. We hope you found it helpful and practical. In Chapter 3, we turn to the important sense of touch. Yes, that can also be affected by ageing and dementia. We'll hear some personal stories and, again, practical ideas of managing changes to the sense of touch. Now to Chapter 3 of Talking Sense, where we talk about the all-important sense of touch. Imagine life without it, or if it's impaired in some way. Aging and dementia can have an impact on it. We'll offer some practical tips of dealing with any difficulties in touch, and we'll hear some personal stories. While dementia may mean that the experience of touch changes and sometimes becomes challenging, every person needs positive experiences of appropriate touch. In English and other languages, touch has many meanings. The most commonly recognised is to cause or permit a part of the body, especially the hands or fingers, to come into contact with an object or person so as to feel, disturb, or move it. We often use our hands to touch others, and it's our skin which hosts tactile receptors. The somatic sensory system is responsible for the sense of touch. This system has nerve receptors that help you feel when something is in contact with your skin. You also have specialized nerve receptors that transmit information about pain and temperature changes. Touching and feeling is thought to be the sense which is most developed in the mother's womb. It's a sense which requires direct contact to understand an object or the environment. At the slightest touch, millions of tactile sensors throughout the body send countless messages to the brain. In the case of darkness, blindness, or impairment of vision, touch can help us to position ourselves in relation to other people and things. This is also recognised as spatial orientation. The sense of touch is deeply embedded in us from the moment we are born and when our mothers first hold us. This stays with us throughout our lives as we experience comfort, love, and a multiplicity of positive emotions from the appropriate touch of someone else. Of course, we understand that regrettably, touch is not always pleasant, and sometimes it's the previous experience of an unpleasant touch that can affect our feelings about later occasions of touch. It's worth highlighting the difference between intentional, caring touch with our hands and the more general touch that occurs when other parts of the body come into contact with things. Caring touch can trigger the brain to release endorphins and serotonin, which are natural chemicals that suppress pain and depression. It can be helpful to massage a person's hand while waiting for pain medication to work. Pets can provide much-needed touch sensations for the touch-hungry. So what's the impact of ageing on our touch? We all lose a few touch receptors over the course of our lives. Ageing can also cause alteration in the sensory experience of pain. Nevertheless, touch remains an active sense in late life, even when someone has dementia. People who have diabetes can get neuropathy, also known as nerve damage, which can cause hypersensitivity to touch. They can, for example, find taking a shower painful, or even the touch of a blanket uncomfortable. And the impact of dementia? Oversensitivity, also known as hypersensitivity, or reduced sensitivity, also known as hyposensitivity to touch, are both problems that can arise from dementia. Hypersensitivity is most likely to arise in the mouth, fronts of hands, soles of feet, and genitalia. Other parts of the body can become hyposensitive, with people reporting less sensation in these areas. Sometimes this can lead to a diminished sense of pain, which can be hazardous. For example, Ross cannot feel hot water and his wife has to stop him, putting his hands in very hot water. People with dementia can react negatively to some kinds of touching, and as mentioned, this may relate to past trauma, which they are unable to explain. They may also misinterpret touch or be extra sensitive to it. However, it's crucially necessary to experience positive touch because it can offer so much comfort and reassurance. The important point is to respect the person's space and personal wishes.
Philip is a farmer who lived at home until he was admitted to a mental health assessment unit. His family had to call for help as he became increasingly angry and more than once had lashed out at his wife. Everyone was very distressed about this, including Philip, who wasn't able to explain why he felt so angry and stressed. After a period of assessment, Philip was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. He continued to be agitated on the ward and would, on occasion, respond to the approaches of others with violence and shouting out. The staff took the time to find out about Philip's life at home. His family worked with the team and revealed the close relationship that Philip had throughout his life with the working dogs on the farm. It wasn't practical to have a dog on the ward, but instead they obtained a life-sized toy of a collie dog for Philip. To everyone's surprise, he responded with joy when he saw the dog. Philip was perfectly calm, as long as he had his hand on the dog's head or had the dog on his lap.
Some people may be hypersensitive to some kinds of touch, like Frida.
The home care partners that visited Frida were not looking forward to their visit, as today they had to help Frida with her shower. Frida never wanted to take a shower, and everyone ended up upset when Frida cried and shouted. They couldn't make her understand that she needed to attend to her personal hygiene. Frida's family struggled with this, as she always loved a shower, and was very particular about her appearance and dress before she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. What they didn't know was that Frida's skin felt hypersensitive and her shower water now felt like tiny needles. She became very upset and the whole experience was upsetting and painful for her.
Again, there are design implications in all of this. Touch is a source of information about the environment, especially for people with impaired vision. It's important if someone has dementia as well, that what they touch makes sense to them.
I just want to wash my hands, but I can't find the tap. There's this metal rectangle in front of me, but no taps. I give up. It's incomprehensible. It's all too difficult.
A tap should feel like a traditional tap. Two individual taps which supply hot and cold water separately. It's essential that they are easy to turn on and off, or someone may not know what it is or how it works. Normal everyday things should feel pleasant and comforting. For example, a wooden handrail feels more comfortable than a metal one, and a wooden bench more comfortable than metal. For people with dementia at the end of life, touch is a crucial sense. It's important that there are pleasant things to touch, such as soft fabrics, and the gentle touch of another human being may be of particular importance.
Here are some more tips for self-management. Make sure you're aware if any kind of touch is unpleasant for you or is altered in some way, whether it's increased or decreased. Make sure you write that experience down so that if you go to stay with someone or go into hospital, they know what to avoid. It may be important to adapt your home and routine to avoid problematic sources of touch. If you have decreased sensation, be especially careful touching hot surfaces or applying heat packs. If you're a care partner, make sure you're aware of the problems that some kinds of touch can bring. It's important to accept that this is a sensory problem that you cannot change. Adapt your home and routine to avoid sensory touch issues and avoid situations where this kind of issue might arise. Remember that appropriate touch is essential and make the most of opportunities such as hand-holding or a massage. You may want to consider whether a comforting item might be helpful for them when you're not present. And finally, touch is especially important at the end of life, when other senses are not working well.
We hope you found this chapter on touch really helpful. Coming up in Chapter 4, an interesting issue, our position sense and balance. It can have very significant implications in ageing and dementia. The reasons why are informative, and as always, there'll be useful tips to enable quality of life. Welcome to Chapter 4 of Talking Sense, Living with Sensory Changes and Dementia. I'm Lee Hatcher. In this chapter, we'll be exploring a sense you may not have considered, position sense and our sense of balance. It's a really important question as we age, and especially in dementia. This chapter will explain how these difficulties develop and what we can do about them. Position sense, known clinically as proprioception, and balance are not generally thought of as senses, but they should be. They help us perceive and interact with our environment alongside the traditional five senses. Position sense can be thought of as a variety of muscular senses working together to help us perceive where parts of our body are and where our whole person is relative to others. Position sense is an awareness of where our arms and legs are and what they're doing without us using our eyes. This is possible through messages from nerve cells in the skin, somatic receptors, muscles, tendons, and joints sent to the brain by way of sensory nerve terminals called spindles. If your feet and legs are under a table, you cannot see them, but you know they are there. You continue to know where they are even when you move them. Proprioception plays a crucial role in human movement control, which is fundamental for daily activities. Usually, this information goes to our brain without us being aware of it. The vestibular system contributes to balance and spatial orientation. It enables us to coordinate our movement and balance. This happens within the inner ear, called the labyrinth. Signals are then sent to the neural structures that control our eye movements and to our muscles so that we remain upright. The combination of position sense, proprioception, and the function of the vestibular system are referred to as kinesthesia, a subconscious but essential awareness that allows us to safely navigate the world. Aging affects both proprioception and the vestibular system. As our joints stiffen or are replaced, our proprioception works less well. We compensate by using our eyes more to know where our limbs are, for example, looking at our feet when walking. As we age, our ears become less efficient, and this includes the vestibular system. Balance is increasingly an issue. Although all the senses have a role in balance, to understand the impact of dementia, we also have to include both proprioception and the vestibular system. Position sense also helps us navigate through spaces and around objects. When this is affected, so is the ability to navigate our bodies within physical and social spaces. People with dementia may find that they are wobbling about, banging into furniture, or even falling, without having any idea why. It may be because of balance problems.
Mr. Proctor could not walk through his local cafe with his family without banging into the seats of other customers. This irritated some people and embarrassed the family. If they had been aware of his difficulties with position sense, they could have chosen better options, such as to walk with him around the edge of the cafe, or choose one that was less crowded.
Enabling design for people with dementia and impaired position sense and balance can include many features, some of them vital. A cluttered space with furniture close together is problematic because navigation through space is impaired and people will bang into furniture. Good lighting is essential for people who are anxious about their position and their balance. An even plain floor which doesn't have patterns will be helpful. As many older people may look down at their feet while they are walking, it's important to put crucial signs at a lower height.
I'm walking through the airport trying to find the toilet. I have to keep looking at the floor to make sure I don't fall over. I can't find them anywhere. Even after someone guides me there, I cannot understand the signs. I don't know which one I'm allowed to go into. There are small drawings on the wall, but I don't know what they mean.
Signs at lower heights may assist people who are unsure of their balance, who may be watching their feet as they walk.
Here are some self-management tips if you have trouble with position sense and balance. First, always be aware that you may experience these kinds of problems. It'll be a good idea to check out possible causes with your GP. Ask for a referral to a physiotherapy review for assessment of balance, aids, and falls prevention measures. If you are in the UK, you may find a specialist physiotherapist called a neurological physiotherapist. It may be helpful to consider using a walking stick or a walking aid. Make sure your home has good levels of lighting. If you're a care partner, be aware that a person with dementia may have balance problems. Consider ways in which you can keep them safe if they start to sway about or if they look like they're about to fall. Understand why the person with dementia may tap hands or feet constantly. Of course, that can be very annoying, but it's an instinctive reaction if they're not sure where their limbs are. Be aware that the person with dementia may be looking down at their feet a lot. It may be because they're anxious about where their feet are, or they're trying to maintain their balance. Finally, look at getting a thorough assessment of your various environments, drawing on the latest evidence. We suggest the Dementia Centred Design Audit Tool. Check it out at dementiacentre.com.
Well, that concludes Chapter 4. Coming up in Chapter 5, Taste and Smell. I think you'll be surprised at the range of issues in this arena that can change with ageing and dementia. But there are creative, at times inspirational ways of dealing with some of these challenges. Hello again, and welcome to Chapter 5 of Talking Sense. Now we turn to issues relating to our precious senses of taste and smell. Most of us take them and the way they enhance our life for granted, until they might begin to change with ageing and dementia. In this chapter, we'll hear about those problems and some of the solutions too. Taste and smell are senses we rely on for a range of daily activities, such as meal times and for safety as well. When these senses change due to ageing or dementia, being aware of what's happening and having strategies to manage can reduce stress and even danger. Taste and smell are interlinked, and at their most fundamental, they are the way the body detects chemicals. Tasting chemicals that we're attracted to facilitates the enjoyment of foods, while smelling pleasant odours, known as odorants, guides us to seek out favourite foods again. The sensing of chemicals also has the important function of informing us of hazards and unpleasant objects to avoid, such as spoiled food, gases, and smoke. Taste and smell work closely together in activities such as enjoying food and keeping safe. As well, taste and smell in the context of a delicious meal or a pleasant aroma can improve social interaction and the enjoyment of life. So how does the tongue and taste work together? The tongue is covered with thousands of small bumps called papillae, which are visible to the naked eye. Within each papilla are hundreds of taste buds. They are located on the back and front of the tongue, as well as the roof, sides, and back of the mouth, and in the throat. Taste is the sensation when these taste buds are stimulated by something in the mouth. What about smell and the nose? When an odorant stimulates the olfactory receptors in the nose, electrical impulses are passed to the brain. Interestingly, the olfactory lobe in the brain is very near the memory system. Sensitivity to taste decreases as you age, although diminished smell may have more of an impact than diminishing taste buds. The taste buds do become less effective, and problems with oral health and certain medications can also affect the efficiency of taste buds. The sense of smell can also diminish, especially over the age of 70. This may be related to the loss of nerve endings and less mucus production in the nose. Mucus helps odours to stay in the nose long enough to be detected by nerve endings. It also helps clear odours from nerve endings. However, certain diseases or smoking and exposure to harmful particles in the air can speed up the loss of taste and smell. One resulting problem is a loss of appetite, which may be made worse because as we age, less saliva is produced, and so the mouth is drier. When the mouth is dry, it's harder to swallow, and eating is not as enjoyable. Some medications can make this worse. What about the impact of dementia? Smell and taste impressions have an important role in our lives. Scents and flavours stimulate various associations and can lead to the recall of either a pleasant feeling or one of disgust, revulsion, or even desire. The Centre for Emotions and Memory in our brain responds to olfactory information. Many people with Alzheimer's disease have a much diminished sense of smell. It can even be a diagnostic clue.
Grace guessed that her husband had dementia before he began to have any other changes, because he lost his sense of smell a couple of years earlier. She worked in the field of dementia care and had read about this possible association. It caused her a great deal of worry, although she said nothing about it to anyone.
Because the olfactory lobe is situated near the memory part of the brain, smell can be quickly and intensely evocative of times past. This can often be pleasant, such as the smell of lavender, bringing to mind a much-loved grandmother. It might also be something very distressing, such as the smell of fire and an experience of war. Being aware of associations and avoiding smells which cause distress is important. On the other hand, reminiscence sessions using little bottles of strong-smelling cleaning materials, such as brasso or polish, or herbs, such as sage or lavender, can be a real treat and lead to enjoyable discussions about memories. Other experiences include taking a dislike to previously enjoyed foods because they no longer taste or smell nice to the person concerned. Other people also describe usually enjoyable smells, such as fresh linen, smelling unpleasant or rotten. There are also phantom smells. Some people with dementia experience olfactory hallucinations or phantom smells, which are often reported as being foul smells. Where someone is alarmed by these smells, such as smoke, they may become unsettled, thinking there's a danger.
Robert cannot tolerate the smell of hairspray or perfumes, which are so unpleasant to him that they have to be avoided. He says he gets a kind of migraine. His family has found it hard to completely avoid perfumes of any sort, and going to department stores has become difficult because the perfume section is nearly always near the entrance.
Some people with dementia can develop swallowing problems. When this happens, a speech and language therapist or speech therapist, speech pathologist, may be able to help. Speech and language therapists provide treatment, support, and care for people who have difficulties with communication, eating, drinking, or swallowing. Food can also get stuck in the airways, causing a risk of choking. A dietitian can help where changes in taste have resulted in changes in food preferences or food avoidance. Hammond Care has produced three cookbooks that address the needs of people with dementia and also those at the end of life. They cover nutrition and swallowing difficulties, as well as providing innovative recipes. Once again, there are design implications with all of this. Consistency of stimuli is needed. A dining room, for example, will be more quickly recognised as a place to eat if there are smells of food, and more slowly recognised if it smells of disinfectant. A care home for people who are blind or partially sighted uses smell to assist people to find their way around. The toilets smell of disinfectant, the lounge of polish, the dining room of food. Stimulating appetite is important, as so many people with dementia can lose interest in food. An attractive cooking smell, such as toast, can be a huge help.
Now, the microwave and stovetop tell me that this is the kitchen. As I walk over, the smell of freshly made tomato soup reminds me that it's lunchtime. There are bowls lining the counter, and the woman making the soup smiles at me. I take one.
In Hammond Care's cottages for dementia care, each has their own fully functioning kitchen opening onto the dining room where all meals are prepared and cooked.
Finally, here are some practical tips for self-management and care partners if you're worried about changes to taste and smell, or if you're smelling things which seem unlikely. It'd be good to ask your pharmacist to check your medication to see if one side effect may be a loss of taste and smell. A diary is often helpful, where you write down what affects you and when it happens. There may be a trigger, like when you're tired or stressed. Give some thought to strategies for coping. For example, if you're worried that you smell smoke and there may or may not be a fire, make sure you have a working smoke detector so you don't have to rely solely on your senses. Keep those batteries charged. You may have to accept that you experience smells which are not there. If there are things which trigger these phantom smells, you may be able to work out ways to avoid them. If you're a care partner, you could talk to a healthcare professional if the person living with dementia experiences a diminished sense of taste or smell. You could plan to do the following. You could spice up or increase the seasoning in cooking to make sure the food has more taste. A food diary is a good idea to help identify the kinds of foods that are not being eaten. Contact fire safety at your local fire service and ask for their advice, especially in assisting the installation of smoke alarms. Firefighters are always very approachable, and maybe also discuss alerts with other bodies, such as utilities providers. Give more attention to good quality oral health and hygiene. As we've already said, Hammond Care has some great cookbooks specifically written for people living with dementia. There are lots of hints and tips.
We hope you found Chapter 5 on Taste and Smell really helpful. Coming up in Chapter 6, an important way to begin to wrap up our audiobook, Talking Sense. Where do we go from here? Now we come to our final chapter in Talking Sense. We're really glad you've made it this far to an important question after such a range of helpful information and insights in our audiobook. Where do we go from here? You'll learn that you're far from alone in facing up to many of these challenges. We've come a long way in our understanding of the sensory changes associated with both dementia and ageing. Dementia knowledge, once considered the domain of doctors and nurses, is now also being understood from the perspective of sensory challenges as told by the people living with the condition. Our wish for this book and audiobook is that it offers hope to everyone who's facing these new sensory challenges. The experience of dementia and the quality of the places and spaces in which we live are intertwined. Dementia can mean a heightened sensitivity to the built and social environment. The more that we understand ourselves and the ways in which we can modify our environments or take positive actions, the better prepared we can be for what might come. It's important for all of us concerned about dementia to understand the biological changes of ageing and the perceptual problems of dementia and how these challenges together can affect the person with dementia. Sources of support and signposting are essential. Professionals who work in this area are just some of the points of navigation in this process. The list includes people living with dementia, care partners and support networks, professionals in sensory, health and social care, professionals in dementia fields, home care partners, care homes, planners and designers, project commissioners and managers, trainers and educators and researchers. Continued improvement in support starts with this. Think dementia, think sensory, think solutions. We hope Talking Sense, Living with Sensory Changes and Dementia, is a stepping stone in this important area of work and that it will inspire others. It's vital that this topic is included in education on dementia. Research on dementia must also begin to address this important area of work. Most of all, we want to ensure that no one faces these issues on their own or feels that they are isolated because of these difficulties. We encourage you to speak out and seek the help and assistance you need. After all, that's where this journey started. To continue the conversation about living with sensory challenges and dementia, and to provide updates for future editions of this book and audiobook, please visit dementiacentre.com.au and add your comments, ideas, and questions. As we conclude Talking Sense, next is an important appendix and insights on light, colour, and vision, as well as a closing message from Agnes Houston. As we wrap up our Talking Sense audiobook, here's some final information and insights on light, colour, and vision in our appendix on contrast and tone, plus a final word from our lead author, Agnes Houston. When we talk about contrasting colours, what we're actually talking about is contrast in the tone aspect of colour. Contrast in tone is measured in LRV, which is an acronym for light reflectance value. This describes how much a surface or colour reflects light. The scale goes from 0 to 100. Black is 0 because it doesn't reflect light. Pure white is 100 because it reflects all light. It doesn't matter what the hue is, that is red, blue or green. The important thing to remember is that for the ageing eye to see something, it needs to contrast with the background by 30 LRV or more. For instance, a handrail needs to contrast with the wall by 30 LRV or more. If you want to have a surface with no visible contrast, the difference in LRV needs to be 5 or less. This is often significant for furnishings, such as floors, which need to be a consistent tone so people with perceptual problems don't see a step. The Royal National Institute of Blind People website has a lot to say about contrast, since it applies to every aspect of seeing, such as reading text, seeing signs, and so on. You'll find that most paint firms give you the LRV with information about the paint. One way of assessing LRV is to use the camera on your smartphone and put it on grayscale. It's then clear whether there's a reasonable degree of contrast. Finally, a word on our authors and some acknowledgements. Agnes Houston, MBE, is a dementia activist who has always put others first. She was diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's disease in 2006 at the age of 57. She's campaigned for best practice and improving the lives of people with dementia, especially those experiencing sensory issues in Scotland, and has received a Lifetime Achievement Award from Alzheimer Scotland in 2013. Agnes is former chair of the Scottish Dementia Working Group and former vice chair of the European Dementia Working Group and a board member of Dementia Alliance International. In 2015, Agnes was awarded an MBE and in 2016 was awarded a Churchill Fellowship. Also in 2016, she was the editor of Dementia and Sensory Challenges, Dementia Can Be More Than Memory. And in 2018, she was co-author of My Home, My Life, Practical Ideas for People with Dementia and Carers. Agnes is a Knowledge Exchange Associate with Hammond Care and a Knowledge Exchange Fellow with the Edinburgh Centre for Research on the Experience of Dementia, ECRED. Julie Christie has worked as a nurse, social worker and social work manager and has a PhD focused on resilience. She's worked across a range of settings, including integrated health and social care, residential care homes, and hospitals. Julie has extensive knowledge of co-production, assessment, risk enablement, self-directed support, and issues of support and protection. Julie is an adjunct lecturer at the University of New South Wales and a visiting research fellow at the University of Edinburgh. As co-founder of the Dementia PhD Twitter community, hashtag DemPhD, she's created a social media space for people with dementia and researchers. Before we go, here are some important acknowledgements from Agnes. Thanks to her husband, Alan, and her daughter, Donna, for supporting Agnes on this road. Thanks to Hammond Care and Associate Professor Colm Cunningham for making her dream of this book and audiobook a reality. To Professor Mary Marshall for practical assistance in translating her collection of writing into this book and audiobook. And to Agnes's writing partner, Dr. Julie Christie. She also thanks colleagues Dr. Raj Anand, Joanna Fozzard, and Annie and Ricky Pollock for their help and support. Finally, a big thank you from Agnes to her many friends and peers who are living with dementia and for taking the time to share their own experiences. Well, that brings our Talking Sense audiobook to a close. Thanks so much for joining us. We trust it's been helpful at a number of really important levels in the journey of ageing and of dementia. Our great thanks to Agnes Houston and Julie Christie for their hugely valuable work and to Hammond Care for this entire initiative. Thanks also to my colleague, Joanna Nicholson, for her narrations, Jeff and Barb Grimes for telling some of our lifelike experiences, and Elizabeth Bottomley for her superb project management of this audiobook. I'm Lee Hatcher. Bye for now.